from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you on 96.5 The Fan. You guys, as always, can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Here in about a half hour, we're going to be joined by the general manager of the Royals, J.J. Piccolo. A regular visit with J.J.
He's probably feeling pretty good about himself right now.
It is the first time, because I looked in April when we had him on and just where the standings were, because they were close in the first week or so, obviously. But this is the first time we've had J.J. on where the Royals are within a game of the American League Central leading Cleveland Guardians.
They were in first place for like a day?
It was something like that in early
half
April.
Half a day?
It was something, but since the season has really got going, we know this is as close as they have been on Friday. You know, last Friday, I guess everybody was excited too against the Phillies before the two games. But a doubleheader sweep has positioned the Royals to that. So we're obviously fired up to have JJ on the show today. A lot to get into with him. We'll be talking Royals throughout the show. We know they're back in action tonight. 30 games to go. And with 30 games to go, we can call it. People can save the audio all they want. The Royals are making the playoffs. You and I have thought that was the case for a while, but now with 30 to go, and you look at how things are setting up, and yesterday was perfection, a doubleheader sweep. The Red Sox lost twice yesterday. The Twins lose. All of that. The Royals are making the playoffs, and the numbers back it up now. Even the skeptical national media about this team at times, some of the projections that are out there from your pick your side, I don't care, your fan graphs, your baseball references, they're all at 90%. The Royals are making the playoffs. That's not even the question anymore. It's just, are they a wild card? If they are they the best wild card? Are they a division winner? That's what we're talking
wild card?
About.
Yeah. Where will they be? No more caveats. I think a long time the way we said this on the show was, I think they're a playoff team. I think they're making the playoffs. That's a caveat. That's being like, hey, I'm not trying to put this on all of you, but I'm putting it on all of you now. The Royals are a playoff team. Do the math. And then we can talk about some of the things that got them that doubleheader sweep last night. But do the math. They're now 6.5 games up on the Boston Red Sox with only 30 games left to play for them. If the Royals were to finish 15-15, just 500 for the remainder 30 games of the season, the Red Sox would have to go 22-9 in order to surpass them. Hell, if they go, it goes poorly, Gold, and they finish 13-17 for the remaining 30 games, the Red Sox would have to go 20-11, 9 games above 500. Guess what? Got an old baseball reference. Searched up how many times the Boston Red Sox have been 9 games over 500 in a 31-game stretch this season, and the answer was 0, none, zilch. They've never played baseball that good in any stretch of this entire baseball season. So, yeah, Royals are going to the playoffs. I mean, it's a fairly simple statement to do it. And look, they did it on the backs of the normal stuff yesterday, although I would say not the normal strength of the starting pitching. Salvador Perez, and I sent out the tweet yesterday, and it just like a come to a realization. He's hitting his grand slam to slam the door on game 2 against the Guardians. I would have been okay at the time had he decided to leave and had the Royals decided to trade him. I had like accepted my fate, Gold, in the sense that like I respected Salvi wasn't pushing his way out the door and I would have gotten it. I would have understood. I am so glad that man never left town. Thank God. He didn't demand a trade, they didn't move on from him, and he's still a member of the Kansas City Royals because, like, yesterday's game and this whole season has just been like a reward tour for sticking it out as long as you have with the Royals.
Well, it's been a blast. I mean, how fun was yesterday in particular? I mean, it was a perfect day, the ups and downs of each individual game, but you're right. You said something there. It was kind of the typical formula or whatever. It wasn't, though, Cody. That second game, usually that second game has been the formula of how they lose.
Yeah.
Blunders in the field, because I don't know what the hell was
unearned
going on.
Unearned air immediately, down 3-0 in the first.
I mean, right field, that was just...
It was not a great play by Dyron.
that was a disaster. Yeah. I mean, that was awful, yeah. Right? But that had sunk them in other games, especially against playoff teams and quality competition. But it did not yesterday. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There's individual performances in that game. There's individual performances in both. I mean, MJ Melendez was sensational in the first. They win that game because of him, the first go around. That play that he made as well is as good as it gets.
He came out of nowhere. Well, MJ Melendez, it was probably like a month ago. I'm still not here telling you that MJ Melendez is a flawless player who can do no wrong. He is going to hit a big home run in a playoff game for the Royals. He's just going to do it. It's his energy. And it's because I probably watched Mike Moustakas do it before, like a month ago, where like, I guess he's just essentially Mike Moustakas. Because yeah, the overall stats this year are never going to look all that good, but he's hit 265 since the All-Star break. Home runs are happening. And now he's making tremendous plays in left field to help them win the game. Yesterday was the most fun I have had as a Royals fan in a decade. Since 2015, this is the most fun day to be a Royals fan. And I know that they're not in first place, but with 30 games to go, they are one game back of a team whose ass they just kicked twice. They get to come right back on the field and face them again. A season after they had won 56 games, it is hard not to be incredibly optimistic this morning based on everything you witnessed yesterday. And this is like the transitive property. I don't want to get back into the, are the Royals better than the Twins or the Guardians, whoever. It's just who you beat and when you beat them. Right now, they're facing the Guardians, a team in first place, and they've had a very good record all season against them.
Yeah, they've dominated the Guardians, and today is another opportunity, though. You said yesterday was the best day in a decade for you, and I get that. I would say, of course, I hope there are better days ahead, meaning that the Royals are going to actually win this division by the time we fast forward 30 days from now, 30 games, I guess I should say, from now. The Royals could be clinching a division title.
Yes.
And maybe a day or two before that. They're in position to do that. And that in its own right is remarkable. I know we've gone over how this year's team is roster-wise so much different. But still, I think you have to keep bringing it up. 56 wins a year ago. And here we are on August 27th with 30 to go. And they're a game back of the American League Central crown. That's where they're at. And their cushion all of a sudden on the Red Sox grows and grows day by day.
And I had a brief moment of panic in game one when Cole Reagan straight up did not have his command and then got pulled from the game early. And I'm like, oh God, they're going to lose this first one. And then it's going to be, you know, like the only team in the league in which they say bullpen game and you aren't excited about it was game two for Cleveland. You're like, oh no. For a second, I thought it was all just going to slip away because again, Cole Reagan's left early and they're calling it a calf hamstring cramp. And then, I would say they downplayed it pretty heavily after the game. He's like, I was going to get ready to pull him anyway. So maybe that's not the case, but it was a fun day. And again, they got contributions from more than just, and look, Salvador Perez still hit home runs and Bobby Wood Jr. still really good at baseball. Then he was kind of quiet in those two. Who cares? He can step up and win the game today. I just like the guys like MJ or Massey or Paul DeYoung. Like they can find contributions from anyone else across the field, because that's how they're going to actually get this division back. It is hard. Like, are you willing to predict yet that they're winning the division?
No.
Okay.
Obviously,
I didn't know what it was going to take.
I, of course, hope that's the case. You know, it's funny how everything played out, because someone on the text line said, hey, remember when you said that you don't want to talk about the division a month and a half ago? And that's true. But what did I also say? I said, I won't talk about it unless entering unless entering the Guardian series, they were within three games. And that's exactly what they were within when the series started.
Yeah.
And now we fast forward today and they're only a game back. So, yeah, I'm willing to talk about the division. They did exactly what I said they needed to do heading in to the Guardian series. People were wanting to talk about the division when in July when they were 10 back, 9 back. So, yeah, at that point, I was like, let's not worry about the division. Let's focus on a playoff spot. Now we know that I think the playoff spot in my mind, in your mind, it sounds like it's secured.
Locked.
Now let's talk about the division. And
that's the only thing to focus on. They're in the playoffs. Let's talk. Yeah, I'm only worried about the Central now.
And I, for a variety of reasons, I want them to win. I'll mention for the 100th time, I have a 30-1 ticket from January on this team to win the division from January. So, yeah. Definitely don't call me a non-believer. There's other people that are more in that. I will say, though, the Royals stretch the remainder of the season for just a playoff spot. These numbers will make you feel more comfortable. The Royals, if they go just 13-17, Just and that's yeah. disappointing, right?
Yeah, it's
the rest
below
of the way.
500.
The Red Sox would have to go 20-11 to actually surpass them. The whole tiebreaker worry not going to come into play. The Royals could go 15-15 the next 30. The Red Sox would have to go 22-9 to pass the Royals. So that's why you and I are coming on the show today and saying the Royals are making the playoffs. That's not the worry anymore. As much as that might make some of you nervous for us to say. You think the Red Sox are going 22-9?
Nope. Told you. I already looked it up. They didn't go that a single stretch at any point this year. Doesn't exist. They've not gone. They've not had that kind of. They're not even playing good baseball. The Red Sox are not a very good team. And for a while, it looked like they were a threat to the Royals because they caught the Royals. They were playing their best baseball when the Royals were playing their worst. And it got like dicey for a half a second. And then what happened? Eventually, the cream rose to the top. The better team survived, and now the Red Sox are going to eliminate themselves from this conversation. I think we almost borderline just know all the playoff teams in the American League, and all we're left saying is, because I'm telling you the Royals are in, all we're really left saying is, which order will they be in? The thing that has excited me about yesterday is, for as many times as we've talked about, like, well, they can't beat a playoff team and how they're going to do it, the Cleveland Guardians have consistently had one of the best records in the American League the entire season. So, yeah, they might not match up well with the Red Sox, a team who they had lost to a number of times this year. They might not match up well with the Twins, but they match up well with the Guardians, and there are other American League teams in which I don't think they would fear to face.
Did you see the crazy stat, too? For whatever reason, the Guardians and doubleheaders are just terrible.
They've been swept in three straight since the All-Star break. Why the hell do they got so many doubleheaders all
and
the time?
And going back to last year, the numbers were bad. For whatever reason, and two different managers, too, by the way, during this run from last year to this year. And it's weird. For whatever reason, you know, I'm sure they're trying to find out the reason for it as well, but for whatever reason, the Guardians and doubleheaders have just been atrocious. Yeah, the exact number, what was it? I saw it was circulating a little bit. Yeah, 0-8 and then 1-17 since the start of 2023 in doubleheaders, the Guardians.
That makes no sense. Why are you so bad?
Weird.
That's a statistical, I would call it anomaly, but I mean, that's a lot of games. I've also seen the betting markets squeezing a little tighter.
You cannot,
I'll just tell you right now, you've made the arguments for all the, like, the betting reasons that I don't think make sense because we don't do them in the NFL in, because I still think NFL coach of the year is typically worst team who overexceeded expectations. Like essentially the person who won more games by expectation. That is Matt Quatrero by a mile in Major League Baseball this year. The Guardians were a playoff team last year. They weren't trash. So Stephen Vogt took over a playoff team and has kept them in the playoffs. First year as manager, I understand. Q's not that deep into it.
I think it'll adjust. So it's funny, like, the markets aren't, you know, people, they don't predict things flat out, right? We remember, like, we view them as predictions,
but
it's how people are betting. And if you think that it's so outrageous that Q is plus 160 and Vogt is the favorite, then put money on Q. I think if the Royals get to first place today or anytime in the next week, you will see it flip. Because ultimately, I still believe it comes down to that. Unless the Royals lose it by a half game or something, because for whatever reason, remember, you know, it's the early, you know, the money was coming in on Stephen Vogt much earlier in the season. The Guardians got off to a ridiculous first half of the season with a first year manager. So they have probably way more liability on the Guardians than they do the Royals in this circumstance. I'm at the books. So I think if you're like, hey, when will Q be the favorite to win manager of the year? If that ever happens this year, when the Royals are in first place. So it could be
today, be
tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, it could be tomorrow.
Yeah. Tonight they could be in first place. They could be tied for first place with the tiebreaker on Cleveland.
Yeah. So it could,
we talk about the teams they lost the tiebreaker against. Cleveland isn't one of them. They'd have it right now.
Right. So that could change. I think you would see that switch if the Royals were to build up a lead at all in the division.
Textline asked, hey, if they win the Central, aren't they basically guaranteed buys due to the better records, them in the AL East? Not guaranteed, but they would be favored to do that right now. Currently, the Royals have a 3.5 game lead on the Houston Astros, the other division leader. So just as long as they stayed ahead of them as well.
Them this week.
Yes, but yeah, they are playing them at the end of this week. The Royals are going to, we talked about this stretch as being daunting, which it definitely was.
Oh, it is.
But the best possible news about it is this is like, you get to choose your own adventure. You get to decide your own fate. Nobody is going to make those decisions for you. You're not going to just have some team who gets hot and surpasses you or gets, nope, you're going to get to face any team who you are actively competing against for a playoff spot. All of them. who you're competing for seeding purposes. Every single one of them. So, as far as I'm concerned, that's great.
Coming up in 15 minutes here on 96.5, The Fan, your home for the Royals. We'll be joined by general manager J.J. Piccolo, a regular visit with him. A lot to discuss, of course, where they currently sit. Also, some of the performances in the last couple of days and where they're at health-wise with a couple players as well. That's coming up in 15 minutes here on Cody and Gold. Let's talk about the Chiefs a little bit. We know later on today, cut-down day in the NFL. Later this afternoon, maybe before we get off the air, we'll learn some of the names. Will Kadarius Toney officially get cut? We might have to wait till after our show. You'll be listening during the drive, of course, right here on 96.5 The Fan. But they made a trade late last night. So late that we all on our group text got a text from Bink. And I don't know.
Bink was excited. He was on his
something
list
at night about the Royals making a trade for Cam Thomas, as if the Chiefs had just traded for Justin Jefferson or something. They traded for Cam Thomas, a former third rounder from the Arizona Cardinals.
But only like 2 years ago?
Yeah, just 2 years ago, the Royals, the Chiefs give up a seventh round pick. So looking at this trade, there's a couple things. Much like the Juju Smith-Schuster signing, they got better. They added more depth to the roster. Like we discussed with Juju, I think it's very similar here. Cam Thomas, young player. Obviously, the Cardinals thought very highly of him. He was a third round pick. And he adds a rotational piece to this defensive line that early on in the season is not going to have Charles Omenihu. We already know this. And if you're going to play 20-plus games each year these days with the Chiefs, you want to keep Karloftis fresh. You want to keep Chris Jones fresh. You want to have more and more rotational guys. And last year, they had that with Omenihu. He's not going to be available, we think, until
he wasn't available
till the he only
October?
Missed, yeah, he's going to miss potentially till the end of October this year as well. Yeah. And so they wanted to have that. So that makes sense. Cam Thomas, is he going to have six sacks for this team? No. Is he going to be a really nice piece to have his depth? I think that's the case. Because remember, he was a third-round pick 2 years ago. So they're if they thought, and they don't have any edge rushers in Arizona, it's not a good football team. If they thought he could actually be something for them, they would not be willing to trade him for a seventh-round pick. So let's just be reasonable with what they're getting.
So I do think that there's some part of it that the reason why this trade works a little bit better for the Chiefs than the Cardinals is the Cardinals probably didn't have a lot of buyers, and there aren't as many people who run the Chiefs defensive scheme as there are teams who run the 3-4. And I think he's a better scheme fit for what the Chiefs do. I would tell you a lot like Juju, and I would agree with you. I would set reasonable expectations. But do I have to say the Debbie Downer thing here?
Of course.
Do I have to be the person who said, because I've been called a hater on this player a few times.
You should be the one to say
and
it,
this is
actually.
This is unfortunate. This is not good news for Felix and Udike Uzama, because I do not think this team would be like, oh dear God, we need defensive line depth. If Felix was playing pretty good, I think they'd feel just fine about their defensive line depth if they felt good about where they were with FAU. This says more about him than it does about like the massive production they're planning at a getting out of this player. It concerns me for Felix. And we'll have Nate Taylor on the show at one later. I think the simple question I'll ask him is, do you speak to anyone in the organization internally that speaks optimistically about what they're going to get out of Felix this year? I told you, I still think because of the level of developmental player he was, I'd still wait a whole year before making a decision on whether or not that pick just flat out isn't going to work. I didn't like that they were choosing a player that needed such a large amount of development in the first round, but they did. And so I don't want to just like put some clock on it that shouldn't be fair based on how old he was or how young he was in this case and at what stage they got him in his career development. But boy, he is not going to contribute this year based on this, right?
I think
this is just another sign that he's not going to contribute.
I think it's a fair observation, and I'm with you where we all said you got to give this entire year to play out. And the way it's trending, it looks like it's not going to be a whole lot different than a year ago. And if that's the case, then I think some of what has already been said about him is fair, even though I think it's still been too early. But yeah, this move tells you that they feel like they need another piece to rotate. Do I think Felix is only playing, 5% of snaps?
No.
I'm not sold on that. But yeah, this player is probably getting more snaps than Felix and Udike Uzama. I think that is a fair observation based off of what he brings. And again, the Chiefs got better with this trade. Let's just have reasonable expectations for what said
for
player
Thomas.
Is. Cam Thomas, yes, who someone asked, he went to San Diego State. That is correct. A couple years ago, he was out of San Diego State. And Bink did mock him, because I'm sure Bink's going to text me. Bink did
Shout
mock him. a couple years ago to the Chiefs, but I gave Bink a hard time. I did respond back on a separate text, and I was saying, you mocked him in the third round. The team that drafted him in the third round is trading him 2 years later. Doesn't that mean he shouldn't have been mocked in the third round?
No, he was taken in the third round. He mocked him correctly based on where he was taken.
But he wasn't clearly a third round talent.
Well, you know,
if I told
that's
you,
the risk of the
if
draft.
I told you you're drafting anybody in the third round and 2 years later you're trading him, you would probably say probably shouldn't have drafted him in the third round.
He's basically a fourth rounder.
Oh, gosh, not this again.
He was the first pick.
Wasn't he like he was their first pick in the third round 2 years ago?
Oh,
whatever
so
pick that would have been.
He was almost the second rounder.
He was almost the second rounder.
Oh, my goodness.
You know?
Almost, yeah. I mean, even higher. You're not even giving it enough credit.
Someone says, Cody, why do you hate K State?
I don't hate K State. I just.
Yeah.
Okay, so
if you're the
first time ever listening to the show and you're tuning into 96.5 The Fan for the first time on the FM side, I will tell you what my initial problem was with this pick, not the person. I don't have a problem with FAU or K-State or the players. Is I am convinced that that pick was made under social duress. As in, I think the Chiefs wanted their big, woo, fireworks, heel click moment with the local kid. And they made a mistake by overdrafting a player who should have gone later in the draft. So could they have their boo-boo, fireworks, fun time, look, Kansas City draft moment. And so as a result of that, I think they got a player who should not have been picked there. Not drafted, not on a team, not working towards it, not drafted there. And so because of that and last year's performance, it didn't really stand out much.
Can two things be true, though? If the Chiefs three-peat this year and then we're talking next August, like, man, he actually is a bust. You can acknowledge that, like, it didn't really mean a damn thing.
Which part?
Can both things be true? Like,
could he just be a bad player and it had nothing to do with my current theory?
No. But like, it
never affected the Chiefs.
Yeah, like, acknowledge both. Like, in 2 years, are we going to be sitting here and saying we can acknowledge like it was a terrible pick, maybe,
but it didn't hold them back from doing the things they wanted to do.
If during that same time frame, 4 years, they won two rings, then I'm really not going to stress about it.
And one way that they actually proved me wrong on that pick was part of my issue with when they took him was. I didn't want super long developing players for a team that was trying to defend their Super Bowl championship.
Yeah.
I wanted immediate contributors to a team that was doing, in my opinion, immediate things. They won the Super Bowl.
Right.
They already proved me wrong in the immediacy department. They had time on Felix and Udike Uzomah. They didn't need him
to be a major
contributor.
It is definitely trending towards a very bad pick. I don't think anybody can disagree that that's where it's trending. I think in October of last year, people were willing... to say that it was a terrible pick. I thought that was ridiculous.
I'm not there.
But it is definitely trending in that direction, and it's a big year for Felix to prove otherwise.
Your thoughts were right, Cody, in regards to what you wanted the Chiefs to do, but they were already in the position where they could afford to take a flyer on a best available guy that they like because the roster was already good enough that they could afford to take the Felix pick. I guess right now you would say, did Veach select a Sky, correct?
Yeah.
So his worst three picks would be Breland Speaks, Sky Moore, and then Felix Anikiki.
Sure, but I mean, three misses in 8 years.
He's also hit on Creed Humphrey. He's got a second contract. He's the highest paid center in football.
Creed, Trey.
Well, that was what I was going.
Trent McDuffie.
Pacheco.
Is already trending.
McDuffie.
That was what I was getting to.
I mean, I can go through the hits. They're way more.
Well, that was what I was getting to. Is the adage goes, I don't know if it's Bill Polian who said it, but you win in rounds 4 through 7. He is done.
He's the king of
exponentially.
That.
Better than everybody else in that area where he's had a couple
Felix,
he's had a couple misses, but the guys in the 4th through 7th round are the reason why they're as good as what they have been.
Yeah. I mean, Felix as a rookie contract, right? He signed for 4 years. We are a year and a half ish into said contract. I'm just saying
Cincinnati just cut their second round.
Todd Haley on you though. Like the arrow is trending down, but let's wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody said,
I don't think his story's told yet.
Cody, how many sacks does Felix need to get for, I don't know. They said to admit that you were wrong, but how many, because you and I were talking before the show, I think if Felix was a 4-sack guy, we're not having the same conversation.
But that would not prove me wrong.
Correct.
You know, 4 sacks didn't prove me wrong. He just, he found a way to be a productive player, which is what I'm actively rooting for.
He would need to have the 10 sacks where gold, I forget what you said you would do, but he needs to have the 10 sacks to make you wrong.
No, I'd have my head shaved.
No, something different. Head shaped was the...
No, I think they were both.
So you
fought for two different bets to shave your head?
Oh, no, you're right. Felix was, I don't know.
I think it was tattoo because it's exponentially.
I think you were so sure of it. You said you'd pretty much do anything at that point.
Yeah, I don't know what the tattoo was going to be of, though.
Felix. His number.
It would have to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. To prove me wrong, 7.5 this year? 7?
It might have to be more 6? Than that, Cody.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, enough that you feel like the ceiling is back again. Right now, you feel like the ceiling is turn into a rotational defensive lineman with some productivity. Force that guy. I take that right now.
So, real quick, though. So, unless he turns into George Karloftis, you're saying it's a bad pick now?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm just saying for this year, those are my expectations.
Okay.
Like, there's still time for him to become a productive member of this team. I wouldn't rule that out.
Is there, though,
yet.
Because of them adding... I
don't think that helps. That does not help, but there's still time. It's not like Cam Thomas has been productive for his team.
Yeah,
he's got three sacks in 2 years.
He might take some snaps, but it's not. Yeah, let's not suddenly act like Cam Thomas is going to come in and beat Charles Omenihu.
No,
I know, but I'm saying it hurts for him to get those reps.
Prove better
than
him, and then you don't have to worry about it. That's why there's still a chance. You can still prove to the team that you're the
Cardinals,
player.
The Cardinals are punting on a player 2 years after they draft him in the third round. That has to mean something as well.
Holding on there.
Up next, let's get back to the Royals with the general manager of the Royals, JJ Piccolo. We'll ask him about MJ Melendez and how great he looked yesterday. Plus, just where this organization sits with 30 games to go.
This is Cody and Gold on your new home for Missouri Athletics, 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by Heartland Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Thousands of men have been successfully treated for low T, ED, and more, all with discretion and compassion. Make your appointment at heartlandmenshealth.com.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Back here on Cody and Gold, just getting started on a Tuesday on 96.5 The Fan. Here in about 15 minutes, we'll get the latest update on stadium front, what happened in Jackson County yesterday. But let's talk more about these Royals who are just a game back in the AL Central with 30 to go. And it's time for our regular visit with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo. He's brought to you by Technology Group Solutions, helping your business thrive in a connected world. That's TGS. JJ, great to have you on the show as always. And these times it's even more enjoyable to have you on. It's been a bit since the Royals were in this spot. Just what's the vibe kind of right now around the organization, the team? I assume you're in Cleveland with them as well.
Yeah. We are here in Cleveland and the vibe's great. I mean, yesterday was a really huge day to get two wins against the team that's in first place and that we're chasing, and got a little help along the way with other games that went on last night. So it was a really good day. I mean, if you get one game a night, that's awesome. But to get two, it's even better. So the vibe's excellent.
I wanted to start with MJ Melendez, though, specifically. I mean, he helped win that game for you guys, obviously, the first one. That is, you guys stuck with him. I know there's some people that thought maybe you guys should have sent him down at some point in the season. But he seems to be really getting comfortable and now coming up with some big-time plays and rewarding you guys for sticking with him.
Yeah, we've always held MJ in very high regard. He's an upside player that's just, you know, starting to come into his own. The one thing he's done most of the year is he's handled right-handed pitching very well. His defense has vastly improved. That play he made yesterday, he's not making that play last year, and that's a credit to him. You know, the one thing that has been consistent with MJ all year, he gives you unbelievable effort. I mean, every time he gets a base hit, he's looking to stretch it into a double. You know, he goes hard down the line. He plays hard. He's a great teammate. It's just good to see him come up in some big situations. You know, it's a different role for him. He's had to adapt, but he wants nothing more than for this team to win, and he's playing his part very well.
Is it hard not to draw the comparisons to Mike Moustakas? Because, like, I already feel like MJ Melendez is going to have some big postseason home run, because it just feels like when the Royals have needed him the most, that's when MJ has shown up.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing when you look back on Moose, the year he took off in the playoffs. It wasn't the cleanest year for him throughout the regular season, but when the games mattered the most, he played his best. And, you know, we hope that MJ follows in those footsteps. I mean, he's showing some indications right now that he likes the big moment. Going back to that Detroit game, you know, we were dead in the water, and MJ comes up with a big two-out home run and wins the game. He had a pinch hit, about a week ago, a big pinch hit for us. Yesterday he got a chance to play against some lefties, you know, which we haven't done, and he came up big. So it's a good sign, and it's a great story of perseverance, and that's what we need players to do. You know, not too many players come into the league and just immediately make an impact. It takes a little bit of time to settle in, and I believe MJ's starting to settle in.
JJ, last year, or 10 years ago, your team, and I know we don't want to just constantly compare to 14 and 15, but you guys had like a run-up to 14 where the team was starting to win and had success and could start understanding the ways to handle the pressures of people looking at you to win. This time you go from 56 to, I mean, well over that already and pacing well over 90. What do you guys do internally to try to make sure that the players who are experiencing this for the first time and in a hurry, I would say, or a bigger hurry than last time, make sure they can handle the stresses of being a team that everybody counts on playing now?
You know, it really, I know it's getting a little bit redundant saying this over and over again, but it's really just taking it one day at a time. I mean, as big a day as yesterday was, today is bigger, you know, and with every day that we play, we have 30 games left. Every one of these games in that moment, that day is the most important game of the year. I think our coaching staff has done an incredible job just continuing to repeat that message. And whether we win or lose, the next day feels like a brand new day. It just, I don't know how to explain it. I think it speaks to the leadership of Q. I think it speaks to the leadership of the players, how they're handling things. There's been ups and downs, but we've been pretty steady all year long. We haven't gone through a 15-game winning streak or a 10-game losing streak. We haven't done that. So I think that's because of the way we're approaching every day, and I hope it continues for last month.
Another reason why you guys, certainly on the losing side, have avoided the long losing streak is your starting pitching, and Cole Reagan's a big part of that. Anything you've noticed his last two times out that maybe has been different? I know there's some conversation around him wondering if has he hit maybe a little bit of a wall, or has it just been something you've noticed the last two times?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of talk about his velocity, and yesterday where he wasn't at his best, he still had 96, 97 in him. So I know we've put that behind us. I think the last two starts, it's really been a lack of his curveball, having command of his curveball. Now, he was battling those cramps yesterday really from the onset. It was really hot here, very humid. So he was battling the cramps, you know, all the way through. Battled, you know, got us into the fifth, you know, which was really huge for us. You know, when he's at 50, I think it was 55 pitches after two innings, you know, you start thinking of the entire day here. We've got 16 innings to pitch in really big games, but he was able to get us into the fifth. And that's when guys are becoming good pitchers, when they don't have their best stuff, but they can still help the team win. And where he helped us win was he kept us in that game and gave us innings. And the same can be said for Alec Marsh, you know, in the second game. And that's why we were able to get through yesterday really well and put ourselves in a good spot today, at least from a bullpen usage in another important game today. But Cole's going through it a little bit. The command was a little spotty, but you got to trust the larger body of work. And we know what Cole's capable of doing, and he'll bounce back just fine.
But you guys feel like yesterday it was just cramps, and there's not some long-term concern there?
No. It was cramps. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but when he walked that guy, he immediately looked at the dugout and said no, because they were keeping an eye on how he was responding, and Salvi knew it. Salvi called him out, so the cramps were just a little too much. But he'll get more water in him and electrolytes and whatever he needs to do to get ready for the next start.
I was going to ask you about Daniel Lynch, but I'll save that for just a second because you mentioned the name Salvi. I had said earlier in the show, JJ, like I wouldn't have almost blamed Salvador Perez for being like, hey, I want to go to a contender, give me a chance to win. And it felt like those conversations happened with some teams. How happy are you guys that the organizationally Salvi decided that this was the best place to be and that you guys were able to work it out where Salvador Perez never had to leave?
Well, couldn't be more happy. You know, there's that old saying, some of the best trades you make are the ones that you don't. Well, that has certainly helped us, because his leadership, the type of year he's having this year, he's kind of found the fountain of youth, and you know, he's just so impactful in so many ways. I mean, there's no panic in him. You know, he understands what this is all about. The way he goes about his every day, rubs off on other people. And I think he's going to be a key, not only from a talent standpoint, but a key person in how we got to keep things real as we go into these last 30 games. So couldn't be happier that he's here. You know, he belongs in a Royals uniform. Hopefully he's here his entire career, but just really happy he's here this year and enjoying this. You know, when a player has the type of career that he's had, you know, and he's been through a lot of losing seasons, you can't help but to feel happy for him, you know, as an individual to experience this once again.
Have you considered stopping by neighborhood wiffle ball games? You know, you could probably still swing in a wiffle ball game.
I'll tell you what, it was maybe the most amazing story I've ever heard. All I could think of, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia. It'd be like Mike Schmidt stopping by and playing a wiffle ball game and the impact that would have. For so many years, it's such a special thing. But that's Salvi. That's who he is, and that's why we love him.
Yeah, that was incredible. And then, of course, the next day, he also comes up with big-time hit and played great as well, as we're talking to J.J. Piccolo here on 96.5 The Fan. Cody was mentioning Daniel Lynch, and I know it's just one outing, but, I mean, that was a heck of a spot for Daniel Lynch yesterday. It gives you guys three innings, saves the bullpen for today and the rest of the week. Did you think maybe is that the right role for Lynch is in that bullpen?
Very, very encouraging. Of all the good things that happened yesterday, that's up there. I mean, that was very encouraging. The aggressiveness he showed, his fastball velocity was good. He was on the attack. He went through the tougher part of their lineup. You know, going through three innings, he has to go through them at some point. He handled them very well. That was very encouraging. I think we all know we're trying to find some answers in our bullpen, and if Daniel Lynch is an answer, that's great news for us. And you know, he and Alec Marsh have both handled the situation this year exceptionally well. They both have said, I'm going to go down. I'm going to be ready. I'm going to do what I have to do. Daniel was pitcher of the month in the International League. He continues to pitch well. And in a moment where, you know, we're trying to save our bullpen somehow, you know, to get three innings out of him and as efficient as he was as well. He only threw 34 pitches is a great sign for us. He won't pitch today, but he should be available tomorrow.
Last question I have for you. We have been making the argument, like you do for your guys, right? We're like, hey, Bobby Witt Jr. should be MVP. We know Aaron Judge is having a great season. But what about Q for manager of the year? Right now, that is still for Stephen Vogt. But considering where you guys were last year, do you think Q is getting a little disrespected being second in the odds?
Yeah, I believe he should be strongly considered, and that's not to take away from anything any other manager has done in this league. That's a very difficult job, but I think Q's, you know, just that personality. He doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low. He's the same person every day, and that's really paid off. You know, he said from the very beginning, last year, it's over. We got new players. This isn't the same team. But he's also led that way. And I do think he should get consideration, and I'm sure he will get votes. You know, whether or not he wins it or not, it won't take away from what he's done this year. And it's been an outstanding job, and we couldn't be happier to have him as our manager. It's, he deserves whatever credit he gets. And I know internally we're very thankful we have him.
When as a GM are you allowed to start bragging about doing a good job? Is that just like, are you allowed to do that yourself or just hope other people do it for you?
You won't get that out of me. whatever we do is a product of our entire front office and our coaches and our scouts. So it's I just happen to be in the position.
J.J. Piccolo, Royals general manager, another big one tonight. 30 games to go. We'll check in a couple weeks.
All right, guys. Thank you.
There you go. J.J. Piccolo with us on 96.5 The Fan. Our conversations with him are brought to you by Technology Group Solutions, helping your business thrive in a connected world. That's TGS. And yeah, the next time we play him, next time we have him on the show, there'll be 14, 15 or so games to go. And hopefully at that point, Cody, we're talking the Royals actually being in first. They could be in first place
tonight.
After tonight.
Oh, man, that'll feel good. Please. Again, I like JJ, obviously no GM has ever been like, I'm kicking ass. That's like a player thing more than it ever is like a coach or a general manager. I think I'd like to hear that once. There were real JJ Piccolo doubters in this world. Oh, I don't like his height. Like, they were skeptical on Q and whether or not, like, some of these guys he was were going to work. And right now, he in 2.5 years, this is quicker than the turnaround Dayton Moore did. Dayton Moore took a team that had one of the worst farm systems in the league and one of the worst talent bases in the league, and he got him in 7 years up to relevancy. JJ did not inherit a way better situation than that. And he got Bobby Witt Jr., which helps.
Look, so I don't...
Based on farm system rankings and current status of the Major League Club.
I think even JJ would admit, though, like comparing what 2000 and what was that?
Yeah.
Four or whatever, I guess. When did Dade take over? That system, that organization was still in a way worse spot than the inheriting regime this go around.
But it was in a bad spot, man.
No doubt it was, but it was not to that extreme. With that said, of course, the job that JJ Piccolo, Matt Quatera, and the organization has done to go from 56 wins last year to now where they potentially could finish with one of the top two or three records in baseball heading into the postseason. Think about that. I mean, that deserves plenty of praise. And more importantly, if you view it long term, why you should feel good about it is the trades that they have made. Yeah, we'll see long term what happens with Hunter Harvey, but whether it's Urseg, whether it was Reagan's last year, you know, move after move at the pro level, the big league level with scouting, they've been better than they have been in a very long time. And then we'll see long term on the developing pitchers through the farm system, right? That is still, the jury will still be out on that. But the big league level, in terms of evaluating talent on other organizations, trading for them, and whether it's a tweak or whatever, and the success that you've seen, there's countless examples now.
We can talk more about Daniel Lynch and what he had to say about him in a minute, because I think it relates to a thing they need to do maybe in the bullpen. But they might be playing in a new downtown stadium. Can I just briefly, as we talk about what Jackson Kenney's into, I saw the architect rendering of what it would look like in Washington Square Park. Did he make it on Roller Coaster Tycoon and then send that thing out?
It was a little MS Paint.
Couldn't slop a little extra detail on that bad boy? I mean, I get it. You're just trying to show me where the layout would be.
It was not about the stadium itself. They were trying to show the
layout.
Sight lines, if you will, and the layout of what direction it would face and the buildings that would be around it. I get what they're going for, but yeah, that is more of a location rendering than it is a stadium rendering.
I know you love renderings, and that was a sad one by renderings.
Yeah, that was not a real rendering as far as I'm concerned. But yesterday, the news, I think, got overblown a little bit with what happened in Jackson County. Like, I felt like people were hitting the panic button on this. And the reason why I don't think you should panic is because I don't think it was a viable path. What I'm referencing is Jackson County legislature, you probably saw yesterday, voted 5-4 against putting a quarter-cent Chiefs-only sales tax on the November ballot. Today is actually the certification deadline, and so the Chiefs ballot measure is not going to make it in November. And if you go back and you guys have been listening to the show for a little while, you know that I never thought, and Cody didn't think, I don't think either, that this was the viable path. The Chiefs never, as far as I know, wanted to be on the November ballot again. They didn't have an updated plan yet or anything yet.
It seemed like it was more coming from some council members than themselves.
So I know people are crushing the Jackson County legislature today, or Frank White or whatever. I actually don't think this update yesterday was all that big of a deal, because even if it would have passed, I don't think the Chiefs were ready for a November ballot. So to me, this was a little bit of a waste of time and maybe posturing by some individuals in the legislature to begin with. So I don't think that your reaction to seeing that should not be like, oh my gosh, the Chiefs are leaving Missouri now. However you felt before should still be your opinion. I don't think anything really changed yesterday. It is still going to come down to what the city and the state do, not the county. I think wisely, the mayor's office has avoided, and this time around will avoid, the Jackson County legislature. We'll see what that results in for the Royals and from the state. I think the Chiefs, because I truly believe the Chiefs will need more state help than the Royals. But I saw so much doomsday stuff with this Jackson County legislature update yesterday. I don't think it really matters, Cody, because I don't think that was getting on the ballot in November anyway.
Between East Village and East Crossroads and Clay County, right, in North Kansas City, I will say publicly, just based on social media, the text line, interactions with people I know, this has been the most favorable location. People do seem to like this location better, which is not surprising. It displaces the least amount of businesses. It's already on like a functioning part of the city that has public transit to it. The display, you know, like, and this plan would include having anybody who visited the area pay for it rather than just Jackson County residents. I feel a little bit more positive energy with this location, but no, I do not think that what happened yesterday about getting the Chiefs on there has any impact about whether or not the Chiefs are staying in Missouri. I know Q came out yesterday and he said the same thing he's been echoing.
Mayor Q.
Yeah.
Since we were just talking about
Q. Mayor Q. Yeah. Different Q. He came out yesterday and was like echoing some of the things he's been echoing for a while, and he has to, just based on that's his job, which is they're never leaving Missouri. They were never leaving Missouri. Like, I'm not that strong I wouldn't say never, and I wouldn't say for sure. I don't know how anybody could feel that confident.
Yeah, I don't know how either side, wherever you're at on Kansas or Missouri, if anybody can definitively say anything right now still.
But this Missouri plan for the Royals seems really solid. The Chiefs will have until, I think, December 1st-ish or so to announce whatever their plan may be, because I do think they need something on paper to, with the current governor and the setup, if they want this state money, they need the ball rolling a little bit. I think what's holding them up is their original thought was, oh, dude, we'll just get this renovation money and we'll spend 30 years in our, or 20, the next 20 years in our old building. We got 20 years to build the new stadium, no problem. And now they have more work to do than the Royals because they got to come up with like a stadium plan. And are they really going to go, you know, they've got more legwork to do. The Royals have just got to figure out which part of the city people will let them be. Like, what's the closest to downtown they can get that will get approval, not from the voters now?
I mean, yeah, I think there's more, a little more to it, though, on the Royals. And like, we know that whether it was the original Kansas City Star reporting from Sam McDowell on this Washington Park site, it's not a plan, though. You know what I mean? Like, there's a site being discussed. I think saying like they have this plan figured out for that site is giving them too much credit at this point. I don't think they have the full plan. We've heard through reporting that this is a site of interest, and I agree with you. I think it's a really good site, but is it financially viable to go with what the plan perhaps the mayor's office wants? I think, you know, in theory, it sounds really good, much like the Star Bonds in Kansas, where it's people that utilize said district or whatever would be those paying the tax.
You pay the same as I pay.
Sounds great.
Sure.
But that's not in place yet. We don't know. Is that actually feasible to make happen? Can they raise enough money through doing that to pay for the stadium? That's the more important stuff. The location, yeah, it's fun and exciting when we hear that they're discussing a new location. But to act like they already have a plan figured out, I think that's being way too optimistic.
Yes. But I think the Royals are closer than the Chiefs in the sense that
maybe
if the council will just be like, cool, we're good. Do you think that they'll completely redesign like what would have been like their general idea for what a stadium should look like? I don't think so. Like maybe Royals.
The Royals.
Like whatever they thought they were going to put in the East Crossroads, it's going to look a little like that, right? Like I understand they won't have the pedestrian bridge and all the other things that would have kind of tied in that area. And I still get the complaints that are the one issue that people have with this site versus the other two and what was East Village is they're not really building the district like
what
they're
what the Royals were really excited about.
But I think that they found out that the temperature on that was not real warm.
Right, but the big benefit of building a new stadium is that the team, right, wants to own the real estate around it.
More money.
And more revenue, more money put in the team. Well, if you're not having that aspect, then the necessity of needing new revenue for building out the team, you don't have that.
But they've also spent $300 million on a player, so I'm not as worried about them not spending.
Yeah, but why do you think they also were confident spending $300 million? Other than the ability of said players, because they think there's more revenue. Why do you think that I'm sure next year going to charge more for whatever, because eventually anything, if you pay money up front, eventually you're hoping, you're thinking that it's going to bring you back
when
money.
When you change to 96.5, the show, you know, like now Heroes cost $9.65, not $6.10 anymore. Kind of thing, right?
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. So we'll see how this all plays out. But I don't think anybody should be panicking with what happened in the Jackson County legislature yesterday. I think that was a waste of time. We said that a month and a half ago.
Yes.
The Chiefs were not ready for a November ballot measure anyway. All right, coming up next, we get to the 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. We do have our Guillotine League draft tonight. We'll get an update on the draft order. People are already accusing cheating before the draft even starts. Plus, we all talk like cheating. The AFC West is one. I think it is. But let's talk through some scenarios next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.